Thank you very much for being here this afternoon. As our moderator said, I am currently a student in maternal and child health epidemiology, but completed this work during my time at the Illinois Department of Public Health Division of Patient Safety and Quality. I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose. As many of us have heard and even personally experienced, there's been a marked increase in the rate of heroin use in the United States in the last decade. From 2002 to 2013, heroin use increased among all payer categories and all income levels. It has really moved from a problem of the margins and the marginalized to a problem seen in every state and every subset of the population. In particular, we've seen increases in heroin use among whites and among women. From 2002 to 2013, the rate of heroin-related deaths quadrupled in the United States. In many states now, the opiate-related overdoses are the leading cause of accidental death, causing more deaths than car accidents. This infographic shows the rate of increase of heroin use among several groups. Of note, women's use of heroin has increased faster than men's. Young adults ages 18 to 25 have a very high rate of increase as well. The graph on the right is striking, showing the rate of heroin-related deaths and addictions increasing. Heroin use and heroin overdoses are essentially the tip of the opiate use iceberg. Experts have explained that many people began using prescription opiates, either medically or non-medically, and move to heroin. Although heroin use is often more compelling for our law enforcement partners, this slide demonstrates how prescription opiates lead to heroin use. In 2010, 12 million people used prescription opiates non-medically, that is, without a prescription. Of those, about 2 million were dependent on them. We expect that about 7% of people who use prescription opiates non-medically will go on to use heroin, leading to a 45% rate of codependence on prescription drugs and heroin. Heroin is very addictive, with approximately 55% of users addicted to the drug. There are many reasons to be concerned about opiate use. As we saw earlier, opiate users have high rates of overdose and death. In addition, rates of HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and bacterial infections among users are high, especially where harm reduction and needle exchange programs are not available. People who use opiates are also likely to be addicted to another substance, especially alcohol, marijuana, or cocaine. Studies have found that more than 90% of people who use heroin also use another drug, and that using heroin in combination with any other drug increases the risk of overdose and death. In addition to morbidity and mortality, heroin causes significant financial instability. Drug use, and heroin use especially, increase risk for homelessness, and high rates of drug use in a community are generally destabilizing. We don't typically think about heroin use as a problem that affects women or women of reproductive age, but opiate use among women is especially troubling. From 2002 to 2013, opiate-related deaths among women increased by a factor of 5, faster than the increased rate seen in men. Substance abuse by mothers also has a special impact on children and families. Children exposed to parental substance abuse have higher rates of poverty and homelessness. They are at higher risk for a number of social and emotional disorders, including learning disabilities, addiction, divorce, violence, and mental health problems, especially depression and anxiety. As a very tangible outcome, there's also been an increase in neonatal abstinence syndrome, or the rate of neonates exposed to opiates in utero. Drugabuse.gov estimates a 300% increase from 2000 to 2009. This may be driven in part by prescription of opiates to pregnant women. In 2009, nearly 15% were prescribed an opiate during their pregnancy. So, we see an increase in non-medical use of opiates. Non-medical use of opiate often leads to heroin use, with high rates of associated morbidity and mortality. The trend is exacerbated in women, with special consideration needed for the role of opiates in pregnancy and addiction in mothers. In this study, I have described the increase seen here in Illinois of opiate-related hospitalizations and ER visits. This speaks both to the increase in abuse and addiction and to the increased burden on hospitals that are not necessarily well-suited to serve these patients. I examined the hospital discharge data set. a data set that captures every discharge from acute care facilities in Illinois. The data set captures both inpatient admissions and emergency room treat and release visits. The data set uses ICD-9 codes and is able to differentiate certain substances for poisoning and abuse diagnoses, including heroin and methadone. I looked only among women of reproductive age, defined as 15 to 44. I examined rates of hospitalization by various demographic and geographic characteristics listed here. I used the denominator of population and got that information from the census. I categorized maternal home or woman's home county using the behavioral risk factor surveillance system county classifications shown here. As we are all here in Chicago and Illinois today, thought you could get a little familiar with our state. The red in the upper right-hand corner is the city of Chicago. The yellow area surrounding it is suburban Cook County. So both Chicago and suburban Cook County are the same county. And then the blue counties surrounding are the suburban collar counties that we describe as the Chicagoland area. The green counties scattered throughout the state are urban counties outside of Cook County and include cities such as Springfield, Urbana-Champaign, and East St. Louis. The brown or gray counties are rural counties here in Illinois. I defined opiate-related hospitalizations as those with a primary diagnosis or E code for dependence, abuse, or poisoning by heroin, methadone, or other prescription opiate. I have listed the codes here. In 2010, Illinois had more than 2,800 primary diagnosis hospitalizations for opiate use among women of reproductive age. This increased to 3,200 in 2012. Interestingly, more of these visits are occurring as treat and release emergency room visits during the study period. In 2010, about 50% of hospitalizations were discharged from the ER. By 2013, that number was nearly 60%. The rate of hospitalization for opiate use among women of reproductive age increased steadily. In 2010, we had approximately 110 visits per 100,000 population. This increased to 125 visits in 2012 and then declined again in 2013. The mean annual rate was approximately 117 visits per 100,000 population. I examined the mean annual rate by patient race. White women had the highest rate of hospitalization for opiate. The rate was among white women was significantly higher than the rate among black or Latino women. This slide shows the mean annual rate of hospitalization by patient age. The rate is highest among women in their 20s. Of note, the birth rate by patient age is also highest among women in their 20s and early 30s, demonstrating that opiate use overlaps with childbirth by patient age. This slide shows the mean annual rate of hospitalization by patient's home county. Approximately 37% of the hospitalizations occurred among residents of Cook County, but the highest rate of hospitalization occurred in the rural counties in our state. The counties outside of the Chicagoland areas had rates above the state average. Opiate use is a significant problem among women in Illinois. Despite a decline in 2013, the rate increased over the period that I studied. In addition to increasing rates of use and addiction, opiate use has special ramifications for women of reproductive age, including impacts on families and children. In Illinois, rates are highest among white women and among women in rural counties. The study demonstrated that increasingly women are being treated in the emergency room and released. This increases the need for resources for emergency room staff who treat these patients. Hospitals in general, and emergency rooms specifically, aren't places for patients to receive long-term treatment to address addiction. Patients are stabilized and released. Without access to evidence-based, longer-term outpatient treatment, these patients are at risk for subsequent overdoses and readmissions. This may be especially true in emergency rooms and hospitals in rural counties in Illinois. Compared to Chicago, rural counties have very poor access to outpatient treatment programs, harm reduction programs, and other support services. If emergency rooms are the only point of contact for drug users in rural counties, resources for these providers may be especially beneficial. Women have specific needs for effective addiction treatment. ACOG recommends supervised therapy with methadone and potentially buprenorphine for pregnant women addicted to opiates and cautions against abrupt discontinuation without medication support. Women seeking treatment are more likely than men to be victims of physical and sexual trauma. Sex-segregated facilities and trauma-informed approach are important to successful treatment. Facilities that allow children to stay with their mothers that help address outcomes experienced by families are important for minimizing harm and disruption to children and may be key to allowing women to seek and remain in treatment. Perhaps as a result of the increasing burden of opiate use among white population, addiction and overdose are increasingly being seen as public health rather than law enforcement problems. As such, public health brings resources and experience to bear. Here in Illinois, we are beginning to see effective and interesting cross-sector collaborations to address opiate use. Especially in the northern suburbs of Chicago, county health departments are collaborating with legislators, clinical care, and law enforcement to assess and respond to opiate use. The CDC and others recommend several strategies to decrease opiate use and overdose, including increased access to medication-assisted treatment and to antagonists. First responders, people who use, and family and friends with access to naloxone reduce risk of overdose. Programs like prescription monitoring programs can ensure that opiates are prescribed judiciously and reduce their oversupply on the streets. From an epidemiologic perspective, I would also like to point out the use of data strategies. Syndromic surveillance in emergency rooms may alert us to spikes in overdose. Recently here in the Chicago area, we had a dramatic spike in overdoses after a batch of heroin was laced with fentanyl, resulting in 74 overdoses in 72 hours. Data systems working together with groups that serve the public can alert us to problems like these. In addition, I think the hospital discharge data is a good data set for this kind of study, but there are obviously problems with it, and we would be well served to consider other data sets as well. I would like to acknowledge my colleagues at the Illinois Department of Public Health, Division of Patient Safety and Quality, who assisted with this work. Here's some papers I looked at.
Thank you, Julia. Now I'll ask for all of the presenters to come up to the dais, and we'll open it up for questions. Are there any questions? Well, okay. I'll go first then to break the ice. I have questions I thought of for every presenter, so no one should be left out if we don't end up getting to them. The first one I'll go to is, it's fine, you can sit there. We're going to try and move the microphone so you can hear, and also because they're recording, but I'm not sure how far it's going to move. From experience from yesterday, it might get over to the third presenter, so we may have to have a little movement of chairs or coming up here, but just wanted to throw that out there. So the first question I have is for our first presenter, and you, in your presentation, there was a slide where you showed the cut points of, I'll call them the cut point, but it was less than 10% and 10% or more. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you chose that 10% as the threshold in which to make that that cut. And let's see if how far the microphone goes. I don't think it's going to go too far. If you'll... So they'll have to come stand here.
For the early part of the analysis, before I did the RFC curve, I used the maximum sum of sensitivity and specificity that was achieved in a previous study, and that was 10% for the Nugent et al. Study. And so I placed that into the logistic regression model of a binary cutoff of 10%. Looking at what is the difference between those patients that had clearance of 10% or more versus those who did not clear by having at least 10% clearance.
Thank you. Don't go too far. I've got a follow-up there. Regarding that study, Nugent and all that had 10%, how did they come up with that 10%? Or at least to the extent that they mentioned it, and then just kind of with that, did you look at other cut points beyond, other than that 10%?
For our study, the cutoff point was 24%.
Okay.
It wasn't 10%. That was shown in the RSC curve analysis. Yeah. But there were other published studies that did go at 10%. Our data set comprised of 11 different hospitals, and our cutoff was 24%.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the audience? Come on, don't be shy. Yes. Sure, stand. For the, because they're recording, I'll try to summarize that question. No problem, there's no microphone out there, so we'll, essentially, if I got the gist of it, it was looking at the trends and going from 12 to 13, there was a decrease, and what potentially might the 2014 data say, and what other policy issues around those, around heroin use might there be? Is that close? Okay.
And I was also happy to see that there was a decrease in 2013. I don't know that I would probably attribute it to any one program. I think there are a couple answers. The first is that I only looked in the primary diagnosis spot. So I think it's possible that we would not have seen that decrease if I'd looked further into the discharge record. And secondly, I think sometimes there's just these random variations in the data. And I fear that the 2014 data would show us that we maybe haven't made that much progress after all.
Thank you. Any other questions?